Spring came to interior Alaska with a crash, a splash, and $108,000. As in 28 previous years, last week's ice break on the Tanana River was big news. To the lucky sourdough or trapper who guessed the day, hour, and nearest minute the ice went out would go a record $108,000. And like other big news, Alaskans knew they would hear it first from Fairbanks radio station KFAR, whose special events crew was camped at Nenana, 150 miles south of the Arctic Circle. Announcer Ed Stevens hooked his mic to a portable transmitter and walked to the river's edge. Then he began his flow-by-flow report. Wet snow had been melting as it fell, and about mid-afternoon, sun stabbed through the overcast. Behind Stevens' voice, listeners heard the babble of some 250 sourdoughs and Indians excitedly looking for signs of the breakup. Suddenly, like a carrier flight deck in heavy seas, the great mass of ice heaved and fell. A finger of water slithered across the ice, and a moment later, jagged, crashing flows crunched downstream. No radio audience had ever before heard anything like it. KFAR, in its first coverage of the ice break, had scored again. Since 1939, when pioneer Alaskan capitalist Austin Eugene Cap Lathrop organized his Midnight Sun Broadcasting Company, KFAR has done one of radio's outstanding jobs. To remote Alaska, it has brought news from the outside, glamorized news from the inside. Its record library gives Alaskans the music they like best, symphonies and operatic arias. Most popular non-musical program, Tundra Topics, full of each day's sourdough gossip, who is prospecting where, conditions on Woodchopper Creek, and so on.
Thank you, Eric. That was from Time Magazine of May 20th, 1946. You know, we rather enjoyed that first selection by the Fairbanks Elks Quartet. Suppose we ask them to group around the microphone again for Way Down Home.
Way down home, among the fields of cotton.
In early March, Al Bramstead and Bob Wells arrived in Anchorage to organize the staff and the program schedule of KENI. The morning of March 13th, they learned of the greatest air crash in Alaskan history. A Northwest airliner had flown into the side of Mount Sanford, 200 miles northeast of Anchorage. That afternoon, Bramstead, Wells, and Chief Engineer August Hebert flew to the high mountain site scene of the crash in a Douglas DC-3 of Alaska Airlines. With them went a tape recording machine, with which they transcribed an on-the-spot description of the actual scene of the air tragedy. That night, the broadcast was transmitted by the wires of Alaska Communications System to Fairbanks for release here over KFAR. This was the only on-the-spot broadcast from the vicinity of the wreckage. And now, just a bit of that special events coverage.
coming around again, Bob Wells, and I don't think we'll have much trouble in spotting it early this time around. But for the moment, before we get there, I might say from the last impression I saw there just a few seconds ago that plane almost completely disintegrated. It may have been a combination of combustion and, of course, when it hit that solid rock, which was the side of Mount Sanford. And then, apparently, from all appearances, the heat of the burning plane there, all in a matter of a few seconds, melted the snow on the ice on the side of the mountain. You'll remember that there was a great deal of blue there, and that would indicate that there was terrific heat. And then the wreckage slid down the side of the mountain, almost perpendicular it was, down the side of the mountain, and rested about 2,000 feet lower. And too, we'll very shortly be able to give more complete details. I, of course, couldn't take in all these facts in making a quick pass at it here in this Alaska Airlines DC-3 plane. Now, very shortly, yes, I believe some of the observers here in the plane, too, can see the plane again. They can see the scene of the crash anyway. It wouldn't be right to say that they can see the plane because there's actually nothing left. And, yes, very distinctly now we can see where it hit the side of the mountain, and there in parts is kind of coffee-colored from the flames and the heat and perhaps the smoke, and no doubt that is the reason for the great flash that was seen all the way down at Gulcana last night, just a few minutes after 9 o'clock. And down there below, too, we can see that there are parts scattered all over, very small parts. Perhaps none of them are any bigger than about a foot across. And, of course, it would be impossible to tell from what part of the airplane they come. And now we're beginning to ease away from the scene of the crash. I don't know whether it's possible...
Some of the busiest broadcasters in the world are the KFAR staff at carnival time. Down there in Anchorage, you have your annual fair rendezvous. And here, in early March, we have the Fairbanks Dog Derby and Ice Carnival. Dog racing is the central attraction. And this year, the biggest ever, 19 teams were assembled from many parts of Alaska and Yukon Territory. We believe we are the only station in the world that has ever offered continuous coverage of a dog race. Our chief engineer, August Hebert, without the benefit of established precedent elsewhere in the industry, devised a system with four checkpoints along a 26-mile course, and with another announcer with a short-wave transmitter following the teams in an airplane. If that's difficult to visualize, let's go aloft to hear a bit from the Fairbanks Carnival of not many weeks ago.
Down below me just now, another team. Number 14, that would be Walter Dawn. He is entering the experimental farm area. So swing along back to see if we can spot Mike Agbaba. And Berkman Silas, they should be somewhere along the road here. Yes, here's some teams at the college. Can't see from my position because the plane and the wing obscured it just as we turned around the hill. But we're swinging on around, making some mighty close, tight turns here as we take this run back along the Farmers Loop Road to see what we can spot in the way of dog teams to report for color. Just at the moment here, there's no team in sight. There probably was Mike or Berkman along here. Several planes are up in the air to take views of this run along the Farmers Loop Road. Ah, two teams running side by side almost down here, having passed the KFAR transmitter. They're passing the little lake just down the road. It looks almost like a horse race, running side by side. There's Billy Anorak. And is Al John. They're running just about neck and neck, so Billy is keeping right up with Al John. Should make some interesting figures for Bob Wells to have for me down here at the transmitter. And since I know it's going to be some time before Don Wright gets there, I think that Bob Wells and Mort Clement can play back and forth here for just a few minutes while we take the swing down the Farmer's Loop to let you know where Don Wright is at the moment. So, Bob, take it away just downstairs here.
Yes, Bill Anorak and Al John just went by here a few minutes ago, and Al went by in the time of 49 minutes and Bill in the time of 52 minutes, and they were both together, so that makes Bill picking up those 3 minutes on Al John. Alan, you've been up in the air quite a long while now in that airplane. I hope you don't run out of gasoline. And I understand that Al Bramstedt down there at the starting point has a few words for you. So take it away, Al.
Okay, Bob Wells, here we are at the starting point. Of course, it'll be quite a while, perhaps a half an hour or so, before we see any real activity here at the starting point.
It's a long hop from the dog races to the North Pole. But we believe people outside, in the States that is, should know the truth about this great northern land of ours. In line with this policy, since the war's beginning, KFAR has transmitted no less than 40 programs to the National Broadcasting Company. Listeners of the nation's top network have repeatedly requested more material on Alaska. And shortly, the same broadcast reports on what's doing in the territory will be originating at KENI there in Anchorage. As an example of one of many of our NBC originations heard across the nation, we refer to last January 23rd's contribution of KFAR to the Alka-Seltzer News on NBC. Not long before the following transmission was made, Al Bramstead had attained the distinction of becoming the first radio or newsman to fly over the North Pole. But let's hear him tell his own story as he did it that night over NBC.
Not many hours ago, I returned from the North Pole. At 1:10 yesterday afternoon, we took off from Ladd Field near Fairbanks in the B-29 Lazy Daisy May. About 2 hours later, we were 10,000 feet over Point Barrow, northernmost tip of the American continent. Another 5 hours and 20 minutes over the polar ice cap under a starry, moonlit sky, and the navigator announced that we were directly over the North Pole. I saw below the frozen Arctic Ocean at the precise point where all directions are south. The ice pack was a patchwork of many huge floes outlined by leads of open water, giving the appearance of mighty rivers. It was 40 degrees below zero. One quick look, and our navigator signaled for a wide turn and a homeward course. Last night's flight was the 48th trip over the North Pole for the 375th Weather Reconnaissance Squadron at Ladd Field. The weatherman aboard made regular radio reports back to Ladd Field for relay to the States. One B-29 flight from Fairbanks to the Pole does the work of 24 ground or sea stations. These missions bring the Air Force closer to problems of long-distance polar flights. And who knows, they may be pioneering regular transpolar weather flights where these men would not make that wide turn at the top of the world, but fly over and down to some base on the European continent. All of this work ties into a mighty plan of hemispheric defense on the Northern Front. The cost in maintenance and the railroad tank car of gasoline used was about $15,000. As veteran pilot Lieutenant Russell Mackey of San Francisco set the Lazy Daisy May down at Ladd Field at 5:20 this morning, I concluded that the 375th is doing a good job of keeping a weather eye on the northern limits of the American Arctic. This is Al Bramstead in Fairbanks, Alaska.